idea of where I come from, since you wonder what gives me the credentials to talk about outcome-based education or anything else in education for that matter, because I'm not basically a professional educator. I'm basically a writer. And I got involved in this whole air business of education quite by happenstance. I was an editor in New York City at Grosset & Dunlap, a book editor back in the 60s, and a friend of mine by the name of Watson Washburn asked me to become a member of his National Advisory Council of the Reading Reform Foundation. And so I asked him, well, what is this Reading Reform Foundation going to do? What's the purpose of the organization? And he said, the purpose of the Reading Reform Foundation was to get phonics back in the schools. So I was sort of surprised. What do you mean get phonics back in the schools? Since when was it taken out? And he began to tell me how in the early 1930s, the professors of education changed the way reading is taught in American schools. They threw out the alphabetic phonics method, which is the proper way to teach children to read an alphabetic writing system. And they put in this new whole word or sight method that teaches children to read English as if it were Chinese. So I said, that's preposterous. How could anybody learn to read that way? That doesn't make sense. And he suggested that I read Rudolf Flesch's famous book, Why Johnny Can't Read, which was published in 1955. So that's a good many years ago. 40 years ago it was published. I read the book, and of course, Flesch made it very clear that that's why Johnny was having problems learning to read, was because of the way they had changed the methods of teaching reading. Now, 40 years have gone by, and you would have thought that by now the problem would have been solved, the problem of which is the best way to teach children to read. Wouldn't you think so? 40 years is enough time, is it not? Don't you think that the government could have conducted a simple experiment, simply have 5 schools use intensive phonics, 5 schools use this other method, this new method, and just see which makes sense, which works, and then do the right thing, make the right decisions. But here we are 40 years later, and not only is the situation as bad as it was then, it's much worse. The methods being used are even worse than the Dick and Jane methods. So you begin to ask yourself, something is going on around here. Something is wrong, you see. And every reform that is made never seems to improve things. Every reform makes things worse. So you have to ask yourself, who are the people in back of these reforms? Why do these reforms keep making things worse? And is there an agenda behind all of this? Is it all a big accident? Are all of these PhDs so stupid that they can't see what you and I see? I mean, for example, take the whole idea of what's right and what's wrong, what's obscene and what isn't. I mean, you and I recognize, obscenity when we see it and hear it. But they use things in the public schools today, which in sex education, which any normal human being would say is definitely not for children, it's obscene, pornographic. And yet you talk to the teachers and the educators, their eyes glaze over as if they can't tell the difference. They can't tell the difference, you see. So something is happening. The education system has been taken over by people who have an agenda and are using the schools in which to carry out that agenda. And the latest form of reform is called outcome-based education. Now, at first glance, doesn't sound like anything's wrong. What's wrong with having an outcome, outcome-based education? In fact, every form of education has an outcome. If you send a child to what's the outcome of a Christian fundamentalist school? The outcome is to produce a child that is a Bible-believing Christian who also has good basic academic skills. You'd say that's the outcome. What's the outcome of a Catholic education? So produce a good Catholic who can also perform academically in a satisfactory way. And we know that the Catholic schools for generations produced wonderfully educated children who were very devoted to their faith. Didn't the public schools prior to outcome-based education have an outcome? I believe they did. I mean, when I went to public schools back in the 1930s, the outcome was very clear. They wanted to make sure that every child learned reading, writing, and arithmetic. They wanted to make sure that every child knew how to write cursive, a good cursive script. They had penmanship. We were drilled in it. We knew what the outcome was. They wanted to produce an educated population, you see. But then when the professors began to change things the way they were teaching, producing more and more functional illiterates, parents and anyone who had a brain on his in his head began to question, well, what are these new outcomes? What do the educators want? I mean, what is the end product of this? Well, it's interesting that a year ago, last September, the Department of Education, the U.S. Department of Education, released the results of a survey of adult literacy in the United States. Now, they spent $14 million to find out how well Americans can read. And you know what they found out? You know what the result was? And I have the Boston Globe clipping of September 9th, 1993. 90 million U.S. adults called barely literate. 90 million. Half the adult population in the United States is barely literate, skills found inadequate for workforce. So something has changed in American education, because when I was going to school back in those days, we all learned to read. There was no dyslexia. There was no reading disability. These things weren't even heard of. There was no Chapter 1, Title 1, special ed, anything like that. Well, now, if you find out that half the adult population can't, all of whom have attended public schools, they've all gone to school. We have compulsory school attendance. If you're not in school, if you're a truant, they'll pick you up. They'll either throw you in jail or throw your parents in jail. So obviously they feel that the education is very important, and yet they're turning out so many people who can barely read. You must ask yourself then, is this the result they want? Is this the result the educators want? What did this tell the educators? In the first place, did you hear any great outcry? Did you hear Hillary make a big to-do about the crisis, the literacy crisis? Did she go on the stump and say, we've got to get back to phonics? No, not even a whisper. I don't even think the president even gave a talk about this. And or anybody, no crisis, no sense of crisis, although we're much more, you know, concerned about the environment, health care and all of that, and here this is going on in education. So you have to ask yourself, what is going on in education? Well, I believe that when this information came out, that it simply confirmed what the educators wanted to know, how well their plans were working to dumb down the American people, dumb down the nation. You see, because I believe that all of this is deliberate. Deliberate because we know how to teach reading. We know how to solve these problems. I mean, we've got materials out there in the hall that could fix all of this in 6 months. We could eradicate this reading problem in America if they really wanted to. If they really want, they've got the money to do it, don't they? Because they're spending money on all of this other garbage, on whole language and all of that. So you ask yourself, what is the agenda? Well, then what do we have coming down the pike? Outcome-based education. this is going to radically reform American education because we all know that education is failing. So in other words, they use the notion that the system has failed to produce reform that's going to create even greater failure. But they don't call it failure because from their point of view, where they're headed, that's success. The fact that half the adult population has been dumbed down sufficiently where they can barely read is a success from their point of view because they're using methods deliberately calculated to produce that effect. So they're smiling all the way to the bank. They're saying, here we're spending all of this money to dumb down the American people, and the American people don't even know it. We're robbing them blind, and they haven't the faintest idea what's going on. Meanwhile, we in the academic world are living a very nice lifestyle. You've been to these beautiful university campuses with their mowed lawns and the ivy-colored covered buildings, and the professors who have their sabbaticals and drive around in their BMWs. And, you know, lecture maybe once a week or once a month. And they're the ones who produce all of these materials that are dumbing down the American people. To give you an idea of what their view of literacy is, here's a very interesting paper called the Innisbrook Papers. This is the edited proceedings of a Northern Telecom's senior management conference on issues and perspectives for the 1980s. And one of the professors who spoke there was a man by the name of Professor Anthony G. Ottinger. And he spoke about competition in the United States, about literacy. And this is what he had to say. He said, the present traditional concept of literacy has to do with the ability to read and write. But the real question that confronts us today is, how do we help citizens function well in their society? How can they acquire the skills necessary to solve their problems? Do we, for example, really want to teach people to do a lot of sums or write in a fine round hand when they have a $5 handheld calculator or a word processor to work with? Or do we really have to have everybody literate, writing and reading in the traditional sense, when we have the means through our technology to achieve a new flowering of oral communication? It is the traditional idea that says certain forms of communication, such as comic books, are bad, but in the modern context of functionalism, they may not be all that bad. This is coming from a Harvard professor who was telling you, do we really have to have everybody literate? In the traditional sense. First of all, he says, the traditional sense. That's the sense that you and I understand what reading is, what literacy is. That's called the traditional sense, you see. Now they've got the progressive sense, which is totally different, which says, well, kids really, everybody doesn't have to be literate. Well, if everybody doesn't have to be literate, why is everybody forced to go to school? And then who is going to select who is to be literate and who is not to be literate? He's saying that, do we really have to have everybody literate? In the traditional sense. In other words, we need some people literate in the traditional sense, but not everybody. When I was going to school, everybody became literate in the traditional sense. Now they're saying only a select few will become literate. The rest can rely on television, oral communication, rap. You know, that's the new form of oral communication, rap. You see, we've got it. This is coming from the top. So you begin to get the feeling that these people don't think the way you and I think, but they're putting their policies into action. Their policies are being enacted into law by your state legislatures. We just had it enacted into law in this state in our big education reform law that was passed 2 years ago. And it's all outcome-based education. So what is this outcome-based education? What is it going to do that that previous education didn't do? Well, first of all, it's going to accelerate the dumbing down process. How are they going to do that? Well, an integral part of outcome-based education is whole language. Whole language is this new way of teaching children to read in a subjective way, you know, guessing, skipping words, you know, interpreting what you're reading, you know, like the dog jumped over the fence. You got to interpret it. You know, it's you've got to find the meaning, the true meaning in these things, you see. All very subjective reading. They don't teach phonics, or if they do, they teach so little of it that it's of no use to the youngster. So we know that they're going to continue to dumb down the kids, but accelerate the dumbing down process. Then what they mean by education restructuring is that now the school is going to become the social institution of the community. You're going to have health care. They're going to begin working with pregnant women. They're going to monitor pregnancies. As a matter of fact, a good example of outcome-based education was a program that was tried in North Carolina. It was called the Odyssey Project. Odyssey Project. That's the name they gave it. They didn't want to call it outcome-based education because outcome-based education has become a dirty word. It's become controversial. You see, in Pennsylvania, they've raised such a ruckus over outcome-based education that the educators now are saying, hey, maybe we better not use this term OBE because it's become too controversial. We'll call it something else. Let's call it, in North Carolina, they say, we'll call it Project Odyssey. Sounds great. Nobody will even suspect that it's outcome-based education. But this, let me read to you what the Odyssey document says. It says, quote, the Odyssey Project describes a formal system of basic schooling for students ages 3 to 18 with a developmental prenatal to age 3 component. So now they're going to start education prenatally. I don't know how they're going to do it, but that's what they say. Prenatal. The minute you're pregnant, you're in the education system. The project will use outcome-based education model that focuses on the knowledge, skill, and attitudes that students should possess when they graduate from Odyssey Learning Centers. Now, that wording comes directly from William Spady, one of the major promoters of outcome-based education. If you read his stuff, he talks about knowledge, skills, and attitudes, you see. So there you have it. You have the beginning. They're going to start with prenatal. And then, of course, a student is no longer called a student. A student is now called a learner. Why? Why the change? You know why? A student stops being a student when he turns 18 and gets a diploma. And he's out of the jurisdiction of the school. He's no longer a student. But a learner is lifelong. You start learning prenatally in the tank, you know, and you keep learning even after you get out of school. You're learning all the time. You're learning until you're in your coffin, you see. So now they can say, hey, we are going to control your life from prenatal to death because you're all learners. You're now a learner. You're not a student. So you understand the subtleties and the importance of changing the vocabulary. So now you're a learner. Well, let me continue reading what the Odyssey Project says. It says, five basic exit outcomes will provide the focus for the instructional program proposed by the project. 1. Communicator. 2. Collaborator. 3. Creative producer. 4. Critical thinker. 5. Concerned and confident citizen. All sounds good, doesn't it? You know, what's a communicator? Can he read? Well, oral communication is sufficient, apparently, for these people. Collaborator, what does that mean, collaborator? You know, collaborator has rather negative... You see, I go back to World War II, and when the French were taken over by the Germans, the Nazis, the French who collaborated with the Germans were considered traitors, you see. So collaboration is not a particularly nice word for people of my generation, but for your generation, you probably, you know, collaborator. Collaborate. What they really mean by collaborators for the kids to collaborate with the educators against their parents, you see. That's the collaboration they want. Collaboration with the state, with the parent, with the educators against those who oppose. Creative producer. Well, if you can't read, I don't know what kind of a creative producer you're going to be. Critical thinker. Critical thinkers who can barely read, what kind of critical thinkers will they do? As a matter of fact, Bill Colson, he says critical thinking means criticizing your parents. That's all. That's the whole purpose of critical thinking, is to make sure that you can criticize traditional values. That's the basic purpose of critical thinking. Concerned and confident citizen. Well, that's a throwaway. You know, you could say that about anything, any project. We want concerned, you know, and confident citizens. And then it goes on, Odyssey schools will subscribe to the theory of multiple intelligences and will seek to develop each student's unique talents. This idea that the school can develop each student's unique talents, that's that we know that that's total nonsense. They don't have the means to do that. They don't have the resources to do that. See, when I was going to school, the purpose of education was to give everybody a basic academic skills, basic knowledge, general knowledge of history, geography, etc. And then they said, and then you go out and make your life. You choose your career. You do whatever you want to do. We've simply given you basic understanding, basic knowledge, basic skills. You do with your life what you want. Here, what they want to do is direct you in the path that the elite thinks you ought to be put. For example, in outcome-based education, they now have three types of certificates. No more diplomas. You now get a certificate. The first certificate, there are three types. The first certificate is for the elite. That's the certificate that says you go on to higher education, to the Ivy League universities, because you're going to become part of the ruling class. You're going to become part of the elite. You're going to become like Hillary and Billary, you know, part of the elite. If you follow their careers, that's the elite, you know, and they are the smartest people in the world. Isn't that true? They represent the epitome of intelligence, and they have the moral sanction to lead you, tell you how to run your lives. And Hillary tried very hard to impose socialized medicine on everyone in America, every single human being. With no exceptions. So they are basically totalitarian in their thinking. They don't believe that there should be anybody should escape from their clutches, from their plans. So you have that first certificate for the elite. The second certificate is for those who are entering professions. Doctors, lawyers, architects, anchor persons, writers, artists, those people get their privileges from the elite. The elite sort of hand out privileges to this this second class that supports the elite. They also come out of the universities, and they've got a vested interest in maintaining this elitist system because they're going to get all the perks and all that money. The third certificate, which is called the Certificate of Initial Mastery, is for you and me, the hoi polloi, the masses, the riffraff, the workers, the servants, the slaves, the serfs. That's the third initial. Then they even have something lower than that for the underclass, because they're going to produce plenty in the underclass. They've already done that. Through the dumbing down process, they've created in America for the first time something called an underclass. That is, our core cities that are full of these young people, all of whom have attended public school and can't read or write, can't even speak decent English any longer. They have their own patois. You know, they had all this desegregation business. You have more segregation today than you ever had prior to the so-called, you know, desegregation movement. How has that come about? The dumbing down process has produced differences in language. So now you're getting cultural segregation. The blacks in the inner cities no longer speak the way the rest of the public does. They don't speak standard English any longer. They speak a patois, a dialect. And that's what begins to create ethnic and cultural entities, is language difference. And they're producing a different type of language. And so they're even less likely to be integrated in our society. The only members of the minorities that become integrated into our society are those who decide they're not going to speak that strange language. They're going to learn to speak English like everybody else. They're the ones who learn to read. But most of these people in the inner cities can't read because they're taught by this look-say method, so they're deliberately dumb, and they become the underclass. A very unstable element in the throughout American urban culture, and they periodically produce explosions, social explosions like the one that occurred in Los Angeles, where you have thousands and thousands of young adults with no employable skills, and into all of this rap and all of that, and into violence and drugs, etc., and the schools are responsible for that. People say, oh, you can't blame everything on the schools. You can't blame everything on the schools, but you can blame an awful lot. They certainly should know how to teach children to read. It isn't that they don't know, it's that they don't want to do it. Well, in any case, so there you have outcome-based education, which is going to change the structure of the American school. They're going to expand from prenatal to the old age, and they're going to get rid of the Carnegie units. What are the Carnegie units? The Carnegie units are the way schools were arranged in the old days when you and I were going to school. In other words, you had 2 years of French, 2 years of English, 1 year of math, and if you got a C or even a D, if you just passed, you got your credits. And when you got a certain number of credits, then you got a diploma. That's how you got a diploma. Now they're saying, no more Carnegie units. You're going to stay in that course until you reach what they consider to be competency. And they use mastery learning to make sure that you're going to be there as long as it takes for you to learn how to jump through the hoops that they've created. Mastery learning is based on Skinnerian rat training. You know, Skinner did his research on rats, and he believed that there wasn't too much of a difference between rats and human beings. Now, there may not be much of a difference between B.F. Skinner and a rat, but I believe they're quite a difference between human beings and rats, but nevertheless, he got all of his data from rats and has applied them to human beings. Yeah, he could make rats jump through hoops and press little levers and that sort of thing. And he says, there's not much of a difference between human beings can be trained in the same way. And so outcome-based education uses rat training as the means to make sure that everybody in the class masters whatever it is that they want you to master. For example, attitudes. Very important attitudes in outcome-based education. They call them orientations. Now, you would wonder yourself, where did all this come from? How long has this been, gestating? Well, the whole scheme of outcome-based education goes back to the 50s. It started in the 50s among professors of behavioral psychology and behavioral science. They decided that the American public school should be changed into a humanist parochial school. They wanted to produce little humanists. They said, what we have to do is train kids to become little humanists. That's the outcome. You see, the outcome of a Catholic school is to produce little Catholics. Outcome of a fundamentalist Bible school is to produce Bible-believing young adult Christians. And now the outcome of outcome-based education is to produce nice atheistic humanists. Now, how do we know that? Well, Benjamin Bloom, the godfather of outcome-based education, wrote a book back in the 60s with a group of collaborators entitled The Taxonomy of Educational Goals, Educational Outcomes. That taxonomy is the Bible of outcome-based education, and it was written in the 50s, the 1950s. Well, it took 40 years of working on it and research before they could implement it. And this is what Bloom said about the taxonomy. He said, quote, "This taxonomy is designed to be a classification of the student behaviors which represent the intended outcomes of the educational process." Student behaviors. Behavior is the key word, you see. Because the behaviorists believe you can't see the soul. You can't see knowledge. The only thing that you can measure is behavior, because that's visible. That's measurable, you see. So they think in terms of behavior. What we are classifying, Bloom says, is the intended behavior of students, the ways in which students are to act, think, or feel as a result of participating in some unit of instruction. Now, how are they going to know how you feel? Through these questionnaires, these very detailed psychological questionnaires that delve down into your feelings. And they've been working on these questionnaires for years, at your expense, of course, trying to find the proper techniques of being able to know how a student, what a student believes and feels or thinks. He says, the taxonomy is not completely neutral. This stems from the already noted fact that it is a classification of intended behaviors. By educational objectives, we mean explicit formulations of the ways in which students are expected to be changed by the education process. That is, the ways in which they will change in their thinking, their feelings, and their actions. So, in outcome-based education, the child goes to school to be changed, not to be educated. See, when I was going to school, the teacher wasn't interested in my feelings. You know, my teacher was only interested in whether I knew how to read or was learning what she was teaching. Now, one of the great concerns of these behavioral scientists is they know that it is much more difficult to change children as they grow older. So their view is that, hey, we've got to start as early as possible before the children adopt fixed, before their beliefs become fixed. We've got to get to them as early as possible. And so Bloom writes, quote, "The evidence points out convincingly to the fact that age is a factor operating against attempts to effect a complete or thoroughgoing reorganization of attitudes and values." You hear that? A complete or thoroughgoing reorganization of attitudes and values. Now, when you put your child in a school, did you put that child there to get a complete reorganization of values? I mean, when I was going to school, that was the last thing that any of us would have believed. I mean, our parents put their children in these schools knowing full well that the schools would in no way tamper with the values or beliefs of the students. The children came to school with family values, and the schools added knowledge. They added something to the child's life. They weren't interested in taking something away and changing. So here you have Bloom talking about a complete or thoroughgoing reorganization of attitudes and values. And then he says, "The evidence collected thus far suggests that a single hour of classroom activity under certain conditions may bring about a major reorganization in cognitive as well as affective behaviors. We are of the opinion that this will prove to be a most fruitful area of research in connection with the affective domain." Now, this was written in the 50s, so that they've done their research now. It's complete. In other words, they know that they can bring about a major reorganization in cognitive as well as affective behaviors in one single hour of classroom activity. One single hour. That's why I tell parents, under no circumstances should you put a child in a public school. You don't know when that hour is going to occur. Now, I'll give you an example of what 1 hour can do to some kids. I know of an 8-year-old second grader in Michigan who hanged himself because of a film he was shown in the classroom. Now, these were second graders who were all brought together in the auditorium or wherever and were shown a film on suicide. Second graders. How old are second graders? 7 years old? 8 years old? Now, would you show your child, a 7-year-old, a film on suicide, on hanging and all that? They showed it to these kids. This youngster, the next night in his home, went upstairs to his room to play, and his mother didn't hear a word, so she sent her other son upstairs to find out what Stephen was doing. And there he was. He had accidentally choked himself to death by hanging. He was not a suicidal child. He was a very happy child. But yet, seeing this film appealed to his playful, suggestive nature, and he hanged himself. Now, the parents didn't even know that the child had been shown a film. As a matter of fact, the mother, I've gotten to know the mother rather well, Debbie Nalepa, and she says that she had no idea why Stephen would do that. So she asked his classmates, "Why do you think Stephen did this?" And they said, "Well, we saw this film. We saw this movie." So they all could see cause and effect. The kids could see cause and effect. How come the educators couldn't? Well, of course, they sued the schools. The parents sued the schools. They sued the educators. And incidentally, the teachers all destroyed their lesson plans. That's what is known as, destroying the evidence, obstructing justice. Can you imagine a teacher destroying her entire year's lesson plans of the previous year? You know, they destroyed their lesson plans. Why? Because I suspect that these teachers decided to do what Bloom recommended. In other words, you got to get this, you got to do this as early as possible. You got to do it in 1 hour's time. You can have a great effect on the kids if you get them early enough, young enough, and they wanted to show how it worked. This was their experimenting on the kids. Let's show a suicide film to second graders. Let's see what happens. You see, this is irresponsibility on the part of the educators. And they're just following, Bloom and his research. Add a little more research. The other day in Concord, this was in the ninth grade class. Concord has one of the best education systems in the state. People buy homes worth, $500,000 just for the privilege of sending their kids to the schools in Concord, where they have sexuality education beginning in kindergarten and going to the 12th grade. Well, recently, they brought in a lesbian to speak to the ninth graders and tell them all about the lesbian lifestyle. Were parents informed? No. Just as in the case in the Nalepa case, parents were not told, may we show this film to your children? No indication that a film was going to be shown. This was the hit-and-run technique. Show the film first, then deal with the parents later on, you see. Because if they inform the parents first, hey, we'd like to show this suicide film to your kids. Do you have any objections? Well, I think a lot of parents would object. They'd say, I don't think it's appropriate for my kids, you see. And that would throw a monkey wrench into the educators' experiments. Incidentally, in the court case, the parents lost. You know why? The courts decided that this was a case of educational malpractice, and that the courts would not litigate educational malpractice because there was so much of it in the United States that the courts would be inundated with cases. So they just threw it out. So we're not going to litigate educational malpractice. In other words, parents, you take your risks, put your kids in the public schools, and the roulette wheel goes around. And where it stops, nobody knows. In other words, you're playing Russian roulette with your children's lives and you put them in the public schools. So in any case, in the Concord case where the lesbian gave her talk, a few of the girls had nightmares, problems, were traumatized, and one of the mothers found out. Because her daughter told her, we had this lesbian came in and told us, why didn't the educators at Concord High School tell the parents, we'd like to have a lesbian talk to your daughters, your children. Do you have any objection? No. They use the hit and run technique. The hit and run technique says, bring in the lesbian, let her do her thing, we'll deal with the parental complaints later on. That's the way they operate. Now, this is the same system. I have a dear friend in Concord, Maggie Wickwire, a very concerned parent, who has been trying to get a speaker on abstinence into Concord Carlisle High School. She's been trying for months. The principal is very nice to her, but the principal has learned every single delay technique that has been invented by human beings. Delay, delay, delay. Oh, well, send us the video. Oh, let us read the book. We'll give it serious consideration. They can bring a lesbian in without any problem to do her thing. But a speaker on abstinence? Well, we've got to think about it. we'll have to give it consideration. And anyway, this year is over, so we'll have to think about it next year. Because we've got to plan these things. Susie Landolfi, I don't know if you've heard of that case. She's just an entertainer who just, a pornographer, simple pornographer who talks about condoms and orgasms and all of that. I've seen her on TV, I can tell you. Very graphic. Leaves nothing to the imagination. And these kids were a captive audience. Again, this was another hit-and-run thing. But what happened there is that somebody made a video of Susie Landolfi's performance. And when the parents saw it, they could not believe their eyes or their ears what this lady was doing before these high school kids. And so there's a lawsuit going on, but it's the same hit-and-run technique. Don't tell the parents what we're going to do to their kids, because if they knew what we were planning, they'd object. So we will do it, and then let the parents find out later on. And we'll deal with that the way we always deal with parents. Delay, delay, put them off, write a report, have a meeting, have a discussion. Meanwhile, we have reorganized the children's values. They've done their work, dirty work. That's why you can't trust the educators any longer. That's why the American parents are so up in arms. You cannot trust the educators. They lie, they deceive, they dissimulate, and we've seen the examples of that, and we've seen the harm that they cause. They have no concern for the youngster who committed who hanged himself, or the traumas that they cause with other youngsters when they pull off these various programs. Well, I could go on for a couple of hours on outcome-based education. That's just a sample of what's involved in outcome-based education. So they say there are no more Carnegie units. You can stay in school until you're 25. There's no limit any longer. You see, at least with the previous system, if you did your work and you got, even if you got a D, you got out when you were 18. Or you dropped out if you wanted to at 16, whatever the law was. But now they will keep you there until you jump through their hoops. Whatever it is. And now that since we know that sex education, whole language teaching is integrated in the program. We know that it's a dumbing down process, and that all they're interested in is in creating the new population for what? The New World Order. You've all heard about the New World Order. It's not a rumor. There is a plan for a New World Order. George Bush mentioned it, but it caused such an outcry that they don't use the term any longer. They don't talk about New World Order. Because I know that the American people are on to it. If you doubt that there is such a movement, here is something called World Constitution and Parliament Association. Organizing agent for the Provisional World Parliament and Preparatory Committee, 1991 World Constituent Assembly. And they've got all the names of the people who are part of that. So you don't think there's a movement for world government? Here it is. World Constitution and Parliament Association. And they have people like Ed Asner, the actor, is a member. He's an honorary sponsor. People from all over the world. You go down the list, you could see who they are. Some of these names, you know, we wouldn't recognize. Honorable Ramsey Clark, Honorable Tony Benn of the United Kingdom. Very interesting document. Another important part of outcome-based education is the data collection. They have online in Washington this mammoth computer that's going to monitor every single human being that gets into the system. So they'll start prenatally, of course. It's happening throughout the world. As a matter of fact, when I was up in Winnipeg, Canada, talking to a homeschool conference, my host gave me a copy of the local newspaper, which had a story, front page story. Students take a number. The Filmon government intends to bring Big Brother to the classroom by creating a computerized profile of every student in Manitoba according to confidential government documents obtained by the Free Press. Now, this computerized profile of every student is already online here in the United States at the National Center for Education Statistics in Washington. You're paying for it. I've seen the list of information that they're going to get from everyone that's in the file. It'll be complete. You see, we're headed toward a totalitarian kind of system that is total government control over everybody. And so they're going to have information on every single human being, everything about that individual, religion, politics, parents, everything. Because these people have been working on this for years in their labs. You see, all of us have figured all of these educators and professors working in the universities and these laboratories on these grants, these government grants and foundation grants, oh, they're just spinning wheels. But now they're trying to implement all of this. See, outcome-based education, they've decided, hey, we've been doing all this work to impose this system on the American people so that we can lead them into the New World Order, we've got to implement it. You see, it was okay as long as it was in the lab and they didn't bother anybody. But now they want to take control over your children and, of course, of you too. And here they even have something called Design for a World Homeostat. They have a World Treasury. Not the U.S. Treasury, World Treasury, General Secretariat, Council of Principals, World Ecology Monitor, World Population Monitor, World Economy Monitor, World Security Monitor, World Information Coordinating Board, Executive Coordinating Board, Implementation Research Board, Council of Principals. Where are they going to get all of the people to man these various councils? From the elite universities. Outcome-based education is going to choose those kids, you know, like Bill Clinton, who was a Rhodes Scholar. What do you think the Rhodes Scholarships are all about? They're part of the plan. That's where they ferret out the future leaders of the world system through the Rhodes Scholarships. They interview these kids throughout the country. They're given these questionnaires, and then they choose the likely candidates, and they're sent over to Oxford, where they get their training, where they understand that if they jump through their hoops, you can become president, Supreme Court Justice, Senator, head of a foundation. All these Rhodes Scholars suddenly wind up in the White House or in Congress or the heads of foundations. How do they get there? It's a one-way track to power. You get into the system, that's where the elite is chosen. And they're the ones who are going to be working World Security Forces, World Population Council, World System for Ecological Balance, World Treasury, World Revenue Service. If you like the IRS, you'll love the World Revenue Service. Well, that's where we're headed, and the education system has been taken control by these people. They call it outcome-based education because it sounds nice. But the American people are catching on, and they're saying, no way, Jose. We don't want your outcome-based education. What we want is to get back to basics. What they're trying to say is that there is no escape from us. Don't try to escape from us. But the American people think otherwise, and that's why you have a homeschool movement. Homeschoolers have discovered that the only way they can get out from under this control, this totalitarian control, is to get back to the family and to do it yourself and educate your children at home. It's as simple as that. That's why the homeschool movement is growing as it's growing. People realize that the educators are not interested in educating their children. They're interested in reorganizing their beliefs and values. Once you understand that principle, then you'll keep your kid as far away from a public school as you can. Incidentally, there are a lot of private schools involved in this thing too, so you got to be very careful. You got to know what you're getting when you're paying for a private school, because they may very well be involved in a lot of this nonsense. Well, we don't have too much time, but I'll stop and take some questions if you have any at this time. Any questions? Yes, ma'am. Well, this whole business of the future of standardized testing, you see, outcome-based education uses different assessments. You see, they know the kids are not going to be able to read very well, so they're not going to make use of the standardized tests, the norm reference tests, because they're not going to look too good. So they're using new forms of assessment, such as portfolios, and all sorts of other assessments that don't measure true intellectual capacity or knowledge, so that they'll look good. Now, a lot of homeschoolers are having their kids tested because the law seems to say, well, one way of measuring whether you're doing a good job at home is to just give them one of the standard tests, like the California Achievement Test, the Iowa Test, or whatever. And, of course, the homeschoolers are coming out on top because they know how to read. You know, they're doing well. So they're doing very nicely on these tests. And somewhere along the line, the powers that be are going to try to do something about that. So far, the homeschool movement now is growing so fast and is becoming so powerful in a way, because it's well organized. You've got homeschooling associations now in every state of the union. You've got the Homeschool Legal Defense Association, which has now become a pretty powerful lobby in Washington, so that and now you have this Republican Congress with a lot of so-called right-wing extremists, we're beginning to put a cramp into their scheme. You see, more people are aware of what's going on. So even though the public schools are imposing outcome-based education and most of the kids are in the public schools and most of the parents don't give a darn, they wouldn't care if their kids were shown pornography, out-and-out, you know, movies in the schools, apparently. Because if they really cared, they would have gotten their kids out by now. The system is rotten enough. And it isn't getting any better, and the educators are as dishonest as they've ever been. So if they're not doing anything about it, it's because they're closing their eyes to it, and they're putting their heads in the sand, pretending that, maybe that's your school district is having problems, but ours are wonderful. We have such wonderful teachers, etc. Any other questions? Yes, ma'am. Yes. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, the colleges now are so anxious to get warm bodies in those schools that I don't think they're going to worry very much about whether your high school was accredited or whether you get a degree. For example, homeschoolers are getting into universities, no problem. Well, the college, if they take an SAT test, that's sufficient. And there are enough different colleges that will be able to accommodate anybody who wants to go to college and can pay up. You got $20,000? Come on in. Come on down. $20,000 will get you in. They're businesses. Colleges and universities are businesses. They're not going to make much of a fuss. They only make a fuss when you have more people wanting to get in than they have seats for. You see. Any other? Yes, ma'am. Yeah. In that case, I would say that that teacher didn't care because the child had had problems with that teacher prior to this incident, prior to this thing. And the teacher was not a young girl out of teacher's college. She was ready to retire. So she knew better. She knew better than to show a film like that to eight-year-olds. You know, what I'm saying is that there are many good teachers in our schools, many fine, upstanding, moral individuals in our schools, but there are also a lot of rotten eggs, too. And you don't know what you're going to get. You know. Any other questions? If not, then I want to thank you for your attention, and I'll be at my table, and if you have any other questions, I'll be glad to discuss them with you later on. Thank you very much. God bless you.